But I'm here today thinking about those events all over our state last year. At first, I was surprised, having campaigned in Missouri before, I was surprised at the level of engagement on the domestic issues that the country was facing. I truthfully had never seen anything like it, where people were ready to talk about the specifics of the issues the country was talking about. And as I thought more and more about it, it occurred to me, well, why wouldn't they be engaged? This is not like we're trying to decide what your family's position is going to be on the missile defense system. This is not like we're trying to decide your family's position about foreign policy toward the Middle East. This was an election about jobs and health care and taxes, and in our state, whether your utility bill might double in 10 years. Why wouldn't people be engaged in ways that were extraordinary? And they were. They said they want government to move over and allow them the chance to get the economy back on the right track. They understood that government jobs, while some of them are necessary, and I'm glad to have one, don't pay the bill. Government jobs really are the bill. And we need to be focused on private sector jobs and how to create those jobs. The questions really were, why is the federal government spending so much more money than it's ever spent before, and where are the private sector jobs? And frankly, I would have thought that would be the overriding topic of the first speech I had a chance to give on the Senate floor. But as you think about those two questions, I don't know that anything is a bigger issue in this health care discussion than the impact that the health care bill has had on private sector job creation and on our estimates of future government spending. The biggest single deterrent to job creation is uncertainty. And we've certainly done great things in the last few years to create a sense of uncertainty. If you don't know what your tax liability is going to look like, if you don't know what your utility bill will be, if you don't know what your health care expenses are going to be, you're less likely to take that risk that anybody takes when they create a private sector job than you would be if you had a greater sense of those questions. And in healthcare, for every job that they'd create, or every job they'd think about, a job creator would think about continuing, this was a time when they have to wonder, what's the obligation going to be? What's the cost going to be? I was with a group of small business people in Northwest Missouri one day last year, right after the health care bill passed, about 30 days after the health care bill passed. I was at Rockport, Missouri, and somebody there at that meeting said, look, I have 47 employees, and I've looked at the health care bill, and my accountants have looked at the health care bill, and I need four or five more people right now, but I'm not going to hire them, because I'm not going to get one employee closer to 50 than I am now, because 50 created new obligations that 49 or 48 or 47 didn't. So I'm just not going to hire those people. So what am I going to do? I'm going to pay overtime in the short term, but in the long term, I'm going to look at what I'm doing that's not making much money, and I'm going to quit doing that. Now, there's somebody telling me a handful of jobs ready to be created that he believed he needed to create are not going to happen because he doesn't want to get any closer to this healthcare moment. He doesn't get any closer where the government comes in and says, we're going to make you do things that you don't have to do if you don't create these jobs. Or people I talked to in Columbia, Missouri, in the middle of the state, in the fast food industry, said, we're just going to try to figure out how not to have full-time employees. And what he said was, the person that gives you your breakfast sandwich in the morning may be the same person that across the street gives you your fast food at lunch, because we're not going to have that person as a full-time employee if we can figure out how not to have that obligation. Real, sustainable, private sector job creation doesn't happen in an environment of uncertainty. We need to be focused on jobs that are family-supporting. We need to be focused on economic growth that includes letting American families keep more of what they earn, includes economic incentives for small businesses and employers, and encourages the government to get out of the way so that employers of all sizes can create self-sustaining, stable private sector jobs. We need a government that meets the requirements of the Constitution. And rarely, Mr. President, do we have a chance to revisit a misguided decision. And in fact, this decision and this bill was the result of a set of circumstances that nobody would have anticipated. When this bill passed, was passed by the Senate with the 60 votes that the Senate required at that moment, nobody thought this bill would be the final product. Not a single person that voted for that bill thought that is the bill that will go to the president's desk. Everybody that voted for that bill thought that this will be a bill that gets the Senate to conference with the other part of the Congress, and we'll work out all the things in the conference that need to be worked out between the two. But what happened was that suddenly the 60 votes that passed that bill weren't there anymore, and so that becomes the only thing that can become law. And you know, the plan that the leader, that the Republican leader, the minority leader advances lets us go back and revisit this discussion and do this the right way. Two federal courts have already ruled that the law, one said, was all didn't meet the constitutional standard and couldn't go forward. And why was that? That was because of the way the bill was put together. Put together in a way that didn't have the normal legislative language that would allow severability, that would allow if something is unconstitutional, it doesn't mean it's all. That nobody thought this was going to be the bill, Mr. President. And the American people are the victims of having to rush forward with a bill that wasn't ready to become law. Another federal judge has said the part of the law is unconstitutional that makes people buy a commercially available product. And I, along with a lot of other people, have thought from day one that, there's nothing in the Constitution that allows that to be a requirement. Voters in the state of Missouri, my state, at the primary election day, the second biggest election we have, had hundreds of thousands of people vote, were faced with a question the legislature put on the ballot that essentially said, do you want to be part of this process? Do you want to be part of the mandatory obligation to buy insurance? Do you want to be part of the health care bill? Over 70% of the voters that voted that day said no. They were the first voters anywhere in the United States to go to the polling place and have a chance to say at the ballot box how they felt about this law that would go forward. And they said, Mr. President, they didn't want to be part of it. They understood, those voters understood, that this is a misguided plan, that it puts government between people and their doctors in ways that Dr. Coburn talked about earlier today, in a meaningful way that he and other doctors that join us as members of this body would understand. It puts government between people and their doctors. It implodes the current health care system. I believe the current health care system will not survive this bill, and not that the current health care system is perfect, but it certainly produces great results for people who come here from all over the world. This is a bill that cuts Medicare to pay the bill. Missourians understood that. I heard it over and over again at the ballot box. They said they didn't want to be part of it. I thought for three cycles, three election opportunities, 2004, 2006, 2008, that health care would become the biggest domestic issue. And it was just maybe too complicated, maybe too difficult to deal with, maybe too personal that people didn't want to engage, and they didn't engage. But, Mr. President, this law gives us the opportunity now to go back and get it right. We've needed to deal with health care for a long time. When I worked in this building, on the other side of the building, we sent medical liability reform to the Senate 7 times in 10 years. We sent plans a half a dozen times where people could join together in what we were calling associated health plans and get their insurance that way and become part of however big a group they could figure out how to associate with. So it's not like nobody was doing anything, but there wasn't enough pressure. And this bill very likely creates the pressure that we need to now go back and look for better solutions. And they're there. This idea of associated health plans where you can join other groups, other individuals that are somehow like you or other small businesses like your small business. Medical liability reform saves the most money of anything that can be done for taxpayers, but it also saves money for taxpayers who are paying for their own health care because it takes a lot of expense out of the whole system. Certainly, we want people to have access to insurance coverage that have pre-existing conditions. And in fact, I've proposed in the past and will propose here again this year, along with others, ways to expand risk pools so that people can have access to coverage, but not coverage they wait for until they're in the ambulance and need it, coverage that they get because they want it and they get it. This, we need to empower families. You know, one size, one of the reasons that government design anything doesn't work very well is the one-size-fits-all concept doesn't fit very well. In fact, the so-called one-size-fits-all almost never fits anybody. And that's what I think this bill does for the health care that means so much to American families. Somebody told me one time that when everybody in your family is well, you've got lots of problems. And when somebody in your family is sick, you've got one problem. Well, this discussion of health care focused Missourians and Americans on one problem. How do we have access to health care that's the best health care that we can have, and also is health care that's affordable? There's no real competition in this system, so I'm for buying across state lines. You're not going to see anybody on television tonight advertising health care insurance. But it's pretty hard to watch television for a couple of hours in the evening and not see people competing for your business in every other area of insurance. There's no little green lizard for health care. There's all kinds of other people competing to get your other insurance business, but this hasn't really had a marketplace. It hasn't been transparent. It hasn't been competitive. We can achieve all those things. And we need to achieve all those things. A choice plus competition equals quality and price. And in healthcare, we haven't had enough choice or competition, so we haven't seen that reflected in quality and price. I don't believe the government has the authority to penalize citizens for refusing to buy private health insurance. I don't believe taxpayers will benefit from this bill. That's built on too many false premises. The idea that we're going to cut compensation to doctors back to levels of a decade ago, it's not going to happen. And it's $250 billion of the so-called pay-fors in this bill. It's not going to happen. It's almost equally unlikely that $500 billion of Medicare costs are not going to happen. And if we can find savings in Medicare, Mr. President, we should find them, and we should use them to save Medicare. Only in Washington, D.C. would you say, look, we've got one program that's about to get in really big trouble in a handful of years, so let's cut that program to start another program. I don't think those pay-fors are going to happen either, Mr. President. When employers are telling us they're not hiring because of the uncertainty created by this new law, when courts are ruling the law unconstitutional, when voters are overwhelmingly rejecting it, we need to understand why. Americans deserve a country where the people are bigger than the government. This health care bill opens the door to a future where the government is bigger than the people, Mr. President, and I think we should reject the law, repeal it now, move forward with more competition, more transparency, and better health care. Better health care at a lower cost is achievable if we do the right things. I believe that this bill does the wrong things, and the more the American people look at it, the more they're convinced that it leads us to a future that is not the health care future they want. So, Mr. President, I'm pleased to be able to speak on the Senate floor. I'm pleased to be able to represent Missourians here, and I yield back.